You're listening to Munch, a podcast and website where we pair meals with movies. I'm Ben.
I'm Andre.
I'm Leanna.
And this week, we're here talking about Steven Soderbergh's remake of the 1960 film Ocean's 11.
I didn't know that it was a remake.
It is. I mean, I've never actually watched that original film, so I cannot speak to the quality of the remake nature of this film, but they did a very good job.
I'm just quietly judging Andre a little bit over here.
You didn't know?
I can't believe you didn't know.
Did they also have a 12, 13, and 8?
A 12? No, they did not. Okay. They did have a relatively large A-list cast for that film as well, so it was definitely something they brought back in Ocean's 11, which was released in 1999. This is a 99 film, right?
Nope. 2002.
2002.
Yeah, definitely 2000s.
Wow. Really just... I am just schooling you guys on movie facts tonight.
Doing real good over here.
Yeah. This is a new segment we call Leanna's Movie Facts.
Which is good because, I'll be honest with you, I didn't take... I think I only took one note this entire movie, so I'm not going to have
I know.
My...
I saw you. You just wrote down
2001.
Good.
Live fact-checking, this film came out in 2001.
Oh. It was short-lived.
Filmed in 2002.
Exactly. And, I mean, it should be... It shouldn't be much of a surprise, but we are watching this because Ocean's 8 is very quickly going to be released, and we are hoping to get this up ahead of time. In fact, I'm going to push for us to get it up ahead of time, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. But we are all really excited for the reboot. I mean, it's not really a reboot. It's in the same universe. It's an extension, but...
Is it a sequel? Do we know?
I mean...
I would assume so.
There isn't... I think it is in universe, so...
Well, we know that because they've teased that Sandra Bullock is Danny Ocean's sister.
Would you consider... Question. So for it to be a sequel, does it have to pick up the storyline of where it left off?
No.
Or would you consider...
I would consider it a sequel if it... in the timeline of the Ocean's universe, picks up after Ocean's 13 ended. I would consider it a prequel if it begins when, or before Ocean's 11 did. And I would just consider it, like, in-universe, kind of like a Star Wars story. It would be like an Ocean story if it's within the timeline that's already established of Ocean's 11 and Ocean's 13.
Then I would say this is a sequel.
But kind of to your point... This is that would be like saying Captain America Civil War is a sequel to Iron Man.
Like, it feels weird, right?
It does feel weird. It does feel weird. I mean, it's a little bit more closely related.
What if it's more like The Avengers is a sequel to Iron Man?
It kind of is, though.
Kind of, but not. You had to.
Like,
you
there
had
are storylines that of. Are picked up, you know?
We haven't seen it yet. We'll get back to
that's
you on
a good
that.
Point.
These are just wild speculations.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want it to be? What would be your preferred option?
I mean...
I kind of want it to be taking place in the timeline that's already been established.
Yeah.
I think it'd be really... Yeah, concurrently. I think it'd be really fun for there to be little mentions of things that Danny is doing or things that... are happening in Vegas that make you think, oh, this is, so that's happening right now. Like, for it'll kind of reward the people who have, you know, watched the other trilogy.
And a close eye will show that all the fashion is very 2001.
Oh, that's a good point. I don't think that is the case.
I don't think it's the case.
No, I mean, I think this happens in the same timeline. Like, they've moved on. Danny has made his money. He's off on some island somewhere enjoying his time. And so
you mean Amal Clooney's husband?
Yes. That is exactly why I
please refer to him by his proper title.
That is exactly why I caught myself because I knew we were going to do that entire thing. What if this was all right? Now stay with me for a little bit, but what if this was all leading up to this biggest cinematic crossover or biggest crossover in cinematic history in which I'm not going to say all of the Ocean's cast comes back, because, I mean, some of them have passed on at this point. May they rest in peace. But, like, what if you ultimately have this, like, huge team-up?
Oh, like Ocean's Transformers?
21. I was thinking more Ocean's 21, which is also great because that has the Blackjack connection.
Oh!
But, like, you have the all-women team come together with the remaining members of that original 11
for, Ocean's, like, 19.
We can say they picked up two new ones.
If Ocean's it picks 20? Up at 13, it'll be Ocean's 21.
Yeah. It's hard to tell at this point.
Well, they
somewhere between 19 and 21.
Ocean's 19 to 21.
Yeah. That works for me.
We'll see. That'll be the tagline. We'll see.
Like, what if...
It will be Ocean's 19 to 21 working title.
What, no, would you even want that?
No, that's way too many actors to keep track of.
Definitely.
And we just had the Avengers that had, like, more actors than that. But
did
sure.
Did you have more than 19?
Could you name all of them?
Ant-Man, Superman, Batman.
Ant-Man wasn't even in it. You started with the one Marvel character that wasn't even
that's
in
the one
Infinity
on his
War.
Mind.
Iron Man, Captain America.
His ads are really working.
We definitely had Hawkeye.
He also has just been written out of the Marvel universe.
We had Scarlett Johansson. We had Doctor Strange.
We'll find out in the next one.
We had
the Black Panther.
Black Panther, of course.
Which you could almost count his entire family as superheroes because they're all amazing.
Almost Aquaman.
Aquaman, what?
You didn't see him? He was below water in one scene.
Oh.
But he peeked out just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
And that one scene with the puddle.
So when they said it was the greatest crossover, that's what they meant. Is that
it was
Marvel
the first
and
DC
Marvel. Were crossing mm-hmm. over. Oh.
And Sony with the Spider-Man.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then Deadpool as well. And...
okay.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
Yeah, so... I wish it was longer than 90 minutes. I mean, it was just a lot to, like, pack in.
So there's about 19 actors in, like, main large name actors in Infinity War.
Okay, so to be the biggest crossover event in cinematic history, it would have to be
Ocean's 21.
Ocean's 21.
Pretty much.
And then, oh, well, no, I was going
to
say...
They have to pick up some more people to do Ocean's 21.
There was that Kevin Spacey movie, 21, but they wouldn't really want to get Kevin Spacey,
no,
I don't think.
I don't remember that film being that great either.
No, me neither.
Back to Ocean's 11 and our experience watching it, though.
Ocean's 21 is good because Blackjack. Go on.
Ben already said
that. I mentioned that a little bit ago.
It just sunk in.
It's a good one, though, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It kind of makes sense. They go back to Vegas, and this time, they're robbing the entire strip.
They're playing for keeps.
All at once.
What if Jack Black is in it? Jack Black's Blackjack. Oof. Ocean's 21.
I could see him...
Jack Black, Blackjack?
I could see him being a new member of the team.
I could
the
see
serious,
that,
The serious, like, understated, funny Jack Black that is kind of
yeah, like,
working around. He's doing the work now. He's kind of making the rounds. Working the scene.
Working the scene,
making
the rounds.
We're a little rusty just on talking tonight.
Just... It's been a long week.
It's been a long
Has
week.
Has it?
Just You've got off a had... long break.
Mm-hmm. You've only had two Super actual tough. Work days this week.
But this is going to come out on a Friday, and that's going to be so confusing for our audience. I think we should just move on.
It's always confusing for our audience.
We should just never reference dates on this podcast.
Yes.
Note to self.
Yeah.
But we actually have a blog in which we make meals and pair them with the films we're making. So you can head to getmunchedup.com for that. We had a fun post that kind of dives into some specifics that happen in heist films specifically. And we were inspired by specific moments in that. And you'll ultimately see kind of the food that we made from that. Really nice photos on that one that pull from kind of gambling tables and things like that. So definitely head there to check that out. We also had some drinking rules for this film that I think will also lead us nicely into our experience with this film itself and our thoughts on the film. But first up, we have Drink for Dazing. And I'm going to pass this off to Andre to explain what dazing is.
It's when they haze Matt Damon. So dazing. Damon hazing, dazing. Matt Damon does get hazed a lot in this movie as kind of the, he's new to the criminal life. Well, new to, I would say, organized crime. He's been picking pockets for a bit.
He's but pretty he good at picking pockets,
His too. Parents yeah. are, like, crime bosses, though.
Yes, his dad is, I think.
Okay.
So he's familiar with
he's
it,
familiar
but
with
he
it.
Has...
Yeah, he's this yet is his to get his... Thing. Yeah, he's yet okay. to have his big break to okay. get into the scene and make a name for himself.
Yes, this is the movie where he wets his whistle.
Our second drinking rule is drink when you meet a new team member, which there are...
Well, 11 of them.
There's kind of 10. You drink 10 times because you don't count you start Mal with, Clooney's husband
yeah.
as.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you start Ocean. Out with one. And then finally, drink when Brad Pitt is eating or drinking.
Which happens a lot.
He's got something of an oral fixation.
He does.
Film. Yeah. Actually, it's pretty constant to the point where he reminds me of Han quite a bit. He every scene, definitely. He has something in his mouth.
It's kind of a nice character trait. And supposedly during, while they were shooting one of the scenes, he ended up eating 41 shrimp over the course of the scene.
Oh,
and the many takes they had to do.
I bet he got really sick after that.
It's a lot of shrimp.
Yeah.
How many pounds do you think that is?
Depends on the size of the shrimp. I remember them being like,
they
not
were moderately
big.
Sized. They weren't like mini shrimp.
They were cocktail shrimp.
That's maybe like a pound or a pound and a half.
Oh my god, that's just so much, like, to put in your body. It's a lot of protein. They're like pure protein.
That's just all protein.
I hope they were good. I hope they were well seasoned or something.
Yeah. Like, maybe with, like, a little bit of grilled chard to them to, like, really
get
the flavor.
But by the time
he's
eating the
flavor.
But he also has a cocktail sauce, which can hide some of, like, that monotony.
Yeah.
But those were our drinking rules.
Also, that must mean that Brad Pitt's not a very good actor because he probably had to do a lot of takes if it involved eating 41 shrimp.
That's
Matt
why they
Damon
don't call
was
him.
In those scenes as
oh,
well.
Oh, it's probably Matt Damon then.
And they also had to time it perfectly with when Tess walks down the stairs. And so
it could have been any of them.
Yeah.
So basically, everyone we think of as an A-list actor is actually like pretty bad.
Yeah, they're horrible.
Yeah.
Just the worst.
Well, there's one take Matt.
Oh my gosh.
If you're going to make up these nicknames, you're going to have to keep track of them. I'm not going to keep track of them for you.
Okay.
Wasn't it one take?
Let's be honest.
One take Nick?
That's what I was thinking.
Who's Nick?
It was
Nick
Cage.
But that wasn't it.
No, it definitely was
one
take Travolta.
No, this is not a fun game.
Okay.
I'm going to call it now.
All right.
One take Travolta sounds right, though.
It does not.
We'll look into it later.
Yeah.
We'll get back to you.
We'll do some
We'll do a corrections episode after this one.
God. If we do a corrections episode, we have so much stuff that we need to correct.
Okay.
I've always really liked the idea of a corrections episode, but we don't have the rabid enough fan base to actually correct us.
Call us out. Keep us honest.
I would love that, because I would love to do a segment that is just like us correcting all of our errors. In all of our ways.
And also, all of our follow-ups that we never do. Like, there are so many episodes where I say I'm going to watch something, and then I never do it.
Yeah, how are those Pirates movies going?
I'm getting my MBA.
It's summer now.
You've actually used that excuse before. It doesn't work the second time.
Yeah.
That's fair.
You can only use it once.
Okay.
All right, so Ocean's 11, a typical heist film that has a really nice flow to it in terms of how those conversations roll out. All the characters seem to have really distinct personalities, and you start to like each of their personalities and like them for different things. And it's a really impressive ensemble film when they all come together and it all clicks in a really nice way, and it's impressive for that aspect. But I kind of want us to talk about the elements of the heist and how they play out specifically in this film, and use that as a conversation point to dive into our thoughts on the film as a whole.
One of the things I wanted to talk about was the big, and we're going to get into spoiler territory here. We're going to go into the details of the heist. So if
that
you have not seen
this
Ocean's
17-year-old
Eleven,
movie,
what are you doing?
Yeah.
Get out of here. Go watch the film and then listen again. What I remembered in watching this film was when we sat down and we watched Now You See Me. And we were really frustrated with the ending of that film because it turned out they had like done a bunch of their tricks like in a mock like set of, remember?
Kind of. Yeah.
And they do a similar thing in Ocean's 11 where they fool the casino owner by filming the heist in their set vault beforehand.
Which they also used to practice.
Mm-hmm. And I remember in Now You See Me, we felt like it was a shortcut, like that they had just like kind of glossed over this. But in Ocean's 11, somehow it works. And I was wondering if you guys had any theories, or if you disagree. But if you have any theories why we enjoyed it in Ocean's 11 and it fell flat in Now You See Me.
I think that ultimately that end reveal works because they set it up for you.
It's not like, hey, remember that scene from an hour and a half ago? It was fake.
Yeah, that they found time.
You know,
and this is ultimately why Ocean's 12 isn't successful while Ocean's 11 and Ocean's 13 is. Because it's how they set up that moment, how they set up the ultimate heist. Where here, you know they've already developed an entire practice studio, and they've developed it to scale and to make it look exactly like it is in the Bellagio. And so when you actually have the reveal that, oh, they just shot camera footage of them practicing this, it's not an incredible surprise, it's just a nice reveal.
So it's almost like what makes it successful is that you actually saw the setup, you just didn't realize that you were seeing the setup.
They need to see the audience with enough of those moments to where it's not just like them pulling out a very random card out of the back of their pocket, that the audience, like, you want to make the audience either feel smart or impressed by the filmmaker's ability to show them the ending and have it hiding in plain sight.
That's a really good, I like that you want to make the audience feel smart, because that was one of the complaints I had with Ocean's 12, where you never really had a chance to feel smart because they would pull so many things where it was like, what I like enjoyed in that movie, which looking back on it, I could see why it would let some audience members down, was that it became more about, well, how are they going to get out of this one? You almost didn't care how they did it. It was just like, or whether it was plausible that they did it. It was just that they had these elaborate ways of getting out of, you know, a tight space. But
and each of those films follow very much the same structure in terms of like, there's the setup, either the gathering of the team, and then they kind of dive into this moment where they are studying the surroundings and blending in and learning and setting up for that eventual heist and all the different components that they need to set that up. Eventually do the heist. And then, like, in Ocean's 12, you never really see the components that lead up to that actual, like, the actual reveal. Not that you see what leads up to the heist, but you don't see what leads up to the reveal, and that's ultimately why it like lacks the impact that it does, I feel.
It's kind of amazing that they're able to set up, do the whole gathering the team montage in every movie when most of the members are exactly the same and they're just adding one more. But they
do that in Fast and Furious as well.
Are they adding one more? I mean, there's still, like, to Andre's point, like, in Fast 5 specifically, you already know a lot of the members of the team, but it's more like calling them in for that
exactly.
heist moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They've split off to do other things.
And that one feels so good because you know why they're calling that person in, except for Ludacris, because, you know, at that point you think he's just a garage owner, but it turns out he's actually, like, a hacker and suave man.
They did such a good job with Fast Five in a way that's surprising, because the films prior to that set up for that moment in Fast Five where you already know all these characters. And then when they bring them together, you recognize that they each have different talents that make them a fully fleshed out team. And it's a really nice moment.
Guys, we should watch Fast Five. It's such a good movie.
It's a good one.
It's such a good movie.
It is so good.
It's a good heist, too. And they have that same surprise at the end where you think they're in trouble, but guess what? The money was in a different safe all along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like,
Fast Five is so good.
It's a believable moment because they remind you that it's like, all right, they call in over the walkie-talkie. It's like, hey, you've got a great break at this moment. And you remember hearing that in the movie itself. And so the reveal itself isn't ultimately, like, it's a nice surprise. And it makes sense because you saw the components leading up to that.
Yeah. But the way that the movie is shot, it makes it look like these two things are happening concurrently, which makes for a nice reveal because you didn't have a reason to think that these scenes were happening separately. Mm-hmm. Where I felt like, to kind of bring a full circle back to Now You See Me, it's very sequential. It's like, here's everything we're doing leading up to the trick. Here is us showing footage of us stealing. And then an hour later, it was all fake. Where Oceans intersperses all of it. So it feels like a movie with natural like cuts, even though you figure out there's a time shift going on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, I've seen Ocean's 11 twice this year, and both times I was just kind of really impressed and also happy with my experience watching it as a whole. It's a fun film to kind of just go along with. It's easy to watch. The interactions are kind of nice and funny. The conversations are kind of quippy in a way that's fun.
Yeah, I love what's not said but understood between Amal Clooney's husband and Brad Pitt.
Yeah, like, you know, like, it builds in the understanding that, you know, they have a lot of history.
Yeah.
They've got a ton of history and they know each other very well. And it's just a team that works, and when they work, it is a well-oiled machine.
And everyone's just so effortlessly cool, except for Matt Damon.
And the tech guy.
Don Cheadle.
No, not Don Cheadle.
No, Don Cheadle's pretty effortlessly cool in it.
Who's that the tech guy? Oh, the tech guy.
Yeah.
Oh, the sweaty guy.
Yes, the sweaty guy.
Don Cheadle is explosives.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
What did everyone think about Don Cheadle's accent?
It's terrible.
I.
But I think it was kind of a joke. I think that was like, he knew it was bad. Everyone knew it was bad. He still did it.
I love.
I think he walked on set one day and started talking in an accent, and everyone thought that like he would just kind of stop. But then they started filming, and he didn't stop, and no one knew what to do, and so they just kind of let it happen.
I like that idea, but the writers definitely knew he was British because they did the whole British thing of like, if that happens, we're bond rubble. And people are like, no, we're rubble. And people are like, what? And he's like, Bonnie Rubble. Trouble. The British thing of like rhyming words and then
the Cockney accent.
Yeah.
Okay, but think about this. How authentic did their faces look when they were confused? It was because Don Cheadle was improvising. They didn't write that line. He did.
Whoa.
I do enjoy, like, the panache and, like, he gives it his all.
In fact, I don't think they wrote a single line for him. I think he walked on set one day and was like, you know what you need? You need an explosive guy with a Cockney accent. And he just went for it. And people were like,
they just didn't even know what to do. And they cover that guy's mouth because it was an amazing moment in cinema that just happened. And they're like, this is great. Don Cheadle is here. We might not even have to.
Did you know Don Cheadle was not credited for this role?
Exactly.
Wait, are you being serious?
Yeah. He wanted billing aside, I think, like Brad Pitt and a couple other ones. And ultimately, the company wasn't going to allow that to do it. So he just took his name off everything.
Wow.
And just not credited for this role. But he did get top billing in the preview. In the next two films.
But Ben, this just confirms our theory that he walked on set and they didn't.
He just did it.
How many days of filming do you think they'd already gone through when he walked on set and was like, I'm in this movie and I have a Cockney accent and that's just how it's going to be?
I'm top billing. It's Donnie's 11.
Right. But they were probably like, Donnie, look, we have already filmed 60% of this movie. We love what you're doing and we're going to let you keep doing it. We don't even know what else you have planned, But unfortunately, one of the things we already shot was the credits. And so we just can't put you in them. And he was like, you know what? It's my art. It's okay.
No, I don't think that's how he said it. It's my art, so it's okay. I think it was something like that.
That almost sounded a little like your Michael Caine accent.
It did. It sounded a lot
like it. Sorry, I don't have a good Cockney accent. Clearly, I wasn't made for this role.
But you do have a good Michael Caine accent, so
it's better
you
Michael win some, Caine you lose some.
I just haven't heard Don Cheadle's Cockney accent recently enough. Like, it needs to be in my ear, like, right
before. We just watched Ocean's 11.
I know, but it needs to be in my ear right before I jump into the accent situation. Okay. Well, maybe Michael Caine's eternal. I can always turn on Michael Caine.
Maybe you need to watch Ocean's 11 for a third time this year.
Like, all I need to say is Michael Caine, like, three times, and then I have it.
Yeah.
I can't really do that with Don Cheadle. Like, that wasn't even close.
That was
like
Bonnie Rubble. Bonnie Rubble. No, I can't do
Bonnie Rubble.
No.
Bonnie Rubble. No. Trouble. No. I got it there for a second.
No, you didn't.
Just a brief moment. The tiniest of moments.
Maybe there was like a syllable. I don't know.
I'll take a syllable.
Andre can't do any better, but he's also not going to let you have this.
Let's hear yours, Diana.
Oh, God, no. I don't have it.
Okay.
All right. Fun little bit of trivia. If we're at that point, I mean, we could.
Do you want to hear my one note?
Yeah, let's hear your one note.
I wrote, this is literally the only thing I wrote for the whole movie. This is such a sausage fest because even the background actors aren't women.
It is true. There was like one speaking role.
For my one note, that was pretty insightful.
Yeah.
That's a pretty.
That means that's I was fair. Looking at the background actors and the extras and the random people they talk to, all dudes.
Oh, there is two women that have speaking roles.
Yeah.
And then like, oddly enough, in the boxing scene, I see, like, one woman in the background.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's wearing a gold dress.
It's not great.
Yeah.
It is definitely.
You sure it wasn't a blue dress?
I remember it being a red dress.
Why are you looking at me like that?
There was the whole, like, is it blue, is it gold dress thing? Topical.
That's what you come to this podcast for.
Yeah. Oh, here's a segment. Yanni or...
Get out of here. Okay. What were you going to say?
Laurel. Wait, before... All right, but let's kind of wrap up our like consolidated thoughts on Ocean's 11 before I jump into... kind of this next segment, which is definitely like attached to Ocean's 11, but I think it will provide us an opportunity to launch into what ifs about Ocean's 11 as a whole.
I enjoyed it. You enjoyed it? But I think as a whole, I am just getting fatigued with movies and TV shows and just don't have any women in them.
And it kind of took until 2018 for them to finally...
Yeah, like, it almost seems like these all female reboots, because we seem to be having a trend of them.
Ghostbusters and...
And not just that, we are also in a trend of specifically, I'll call them, like, women empowerment vehicles, but they're movies that specifically feature women in revenge type roles and largely feature a lot of violence. And so like there's both of those happening at the same time kinda right now.
Mm-hmm. And I'm all for these reboots giving women a stage to be in these roles that they could have been in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it just knowing the all-male cast existed in the first place when it didn't need to. Like, they could have cast women in those roles.
Sure.
There were talented female actresses at those times also that could... Like, Julia Roberts is in Ocean's 11. She could have just been one of the people that were part of Amal Clooney's husband's team.
Isn't she in Ocean's 11? But it is weird that, like, they either had a conversation... about it and were like, no, we don't need women in this team, or they just never had a conversation. Both of which I can see being completely plausible.
And just, the more I think about it, it's just, like, It shouldn't blow my mind, but it also blows my mind. It's difficult. It's difficult to stomach.
To go in.
Yeah.
Well, it's almost difficult to go in and be like, no, we're all 11 of these guys are going to be guys.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. all 11 of you.
You think that's difficult, but I don't actually think it was that difficult.
I know it is. I know it's not difficult.
Yeah.
But, like, you would think it, like...
You would hope. Yeah. So, yeah. It's... At the same time as I'm watching it, I also feel inherently frustrated at the fact that it exists, and it took until 2018 for us to get this all-female reboot, when there's probably also a really good movie that exists that has a team that is both men and women.
And also Fast and Furious.
But we have...
Platonic relationships between men and women.
Yes, in a co-working friendships. Situation that
is positive and...
That could also be a really great movie, but I feel like Hollywood feels they have this... penance they have to do. They have to have these all-female films, which I feel like I shouldn't complain about because I'm glad that they exist.
I mean, I don't mind them. I'm enjoying them.
I'm enjoying them too, but it makes me a little disappointed that we're going to this other extreme, and really what we should be doing is just trying to have these more diverse casts that show different kinds of friendships and relationships, and those would all be really interesting, and there's exciting stories there, and this isn't really a critique of Ocean's 11 anymore, but that's what I thought of when I was watching it, and afterwards, that's how I felt. So, I enjoyed it, but it reminded me that this problem exists. Mm-hmm. But I'm super stoked for Ocean's 8.
Ocean's 8 looks really good.
It does! I'm really excited.
I'm really excited for Kate Blanchett's outfits in Ocean's 8.
Yeah, me too.
They look really good.
They do.
There's a couple I'd wear. Andre, let's hear you about Ocean's 11.
Ocean's 11, I thought, was a very good heist movie. We had good twists. We checked all the marks, all the boxes. You had great setting. You had a great putting the team together. Great practice. You had the... Something went wrong during the actual heist, and we've got to improvise. And then we had the twist reveal at the end where, oh, don't worry, we were fine all along. So, yeah, I mean, I thought it was pretty great. I thought it was a very good heist movie, and I think this is what a lot of heist movies aspire to be. I also love the personal nature of the heist. Like, how stealing from this specific casino owner was kind of an act of vengeance for Ocean. Because
Maul Sweeney's husband?
Sure. The casino owner is dating his ex, and they have some interactions in the movie where the casino owner is just kind of generally a dick, and it ends with Ocean showing Julia Roberts that this guy's a dick. And
specifically doesn't care for, like...
Care about
he
her.
He will take his money over her.
Yes.
And, like, it seems like almost that's the ultimate heist. Like, Amal Clooney's husband doesn't care about the money so much as just showing...
Tess.
Mm-hmm. Tess that... Hey, this guy's just a bad guy and not good for you. And I mean, it's also a bummer that Tess can't see that. But it is kind of, there's something nice about the fact that, like, he's not necessarily in it for the money. He's not necessarily, like, he could walk away without Tess in this scenario, but it's more just he wants to show him that, like, Tess should be with a better man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that was like planned into the heist all along.
He's very self-interested and wants Tess to be with him, but which has its issues.
It does. Especially as one of the only female speaking parts, but I've said my piece. Ben, how did you feel about this movie?
I've definitely like hit on how much I do enjoy this film. It's a very tightly created and produced film. There are some beautiful shots in this film, and I like the overall look and feel of this film as well. It is snappy. It is a very confident film. It knows what it's going for. It knows how to get there, and it does it well. There are a couple things that feel a little bit... you just kind of have to go along with it, specifically the pinch being the biggest one, where it's like... Oh, you're just going to steal the pinch, stick it in a van, and that's just going to take out the electricity in an entire city, yeah, which is like science fiction at best. Things like that don't really exist. And you can't run it off of a van battery. Like,
right.
And even then, you can't take out an entire city that easily.
If you could, that would be a heist in itself, getting that. Not just like, there's one security guard in this entire building.
Yeah. Like, the only known way to do that is with, like, nuclear bombs. So that is definitely a level of, like, all right, I just have to go along with this. It is probably my least favorite thing about the entire film. But it's ultimately a pretty small complaint on a film that I largely enjoy despite some of its issues that Leanna has mentioned.
It did really make me want to go back to Vegas.
Oh, interesting. Hmm.
Go gamble.
They do a really good job of like showing.
They make it seem so glamorous.
Yeah, they do.
You're just there with your shrimp cocktail, just having a good time.
Eating my 41 shrimps.
Yeah.
Making money.
I don't really want to go to a boxing match, but I kind of want to go back to Vegas.
Yeah, it's interesting how much Vegas has changed from 2002 to now.
What do you think has changed?
I feel like there's a lot more catering to a younger audience. Like, Vegas has definitely been making attempts to lure in millennials because their audience is aging. So, like, the whole... I don't think clubs were a very big scene in Vegas until relatively recently.
I don't know if that's true, but... Okay.
I think it is.
Are you speculating, or is this you know, something you run on, like, the Wikipedia or something?
Well, I used to work in the gambling industry, and we talked about bringing millennials to
Vegas. I always forget that you did work in the gambling industry.
Yeah, there's, like, the whole esports thing they're doing now.
Long time in the gambling industry.
I mean,
I
read my fair share about Vegas and trying to get into that market, so, yeah.
And also the style of and feel of Vegas has changed over the years, where at one time is a little more, like, theme parky, let's show kind of a very specific architectural style, and now it's kind of moving more towards a modern...
They also went through a family-friendly phase, if you can believe it.
Like, you think about the theme parks on top of buildings, things like that.
Oh, I went on the New York roller coaster when I went there.
How was it?
I mean, I love roller coasters. It was a lot of fun. Can we please go to a roller coaster park soon?
Yeah, we can.
Okay, great.
Cool.
I really want to go to a roller coaster park.
That's planned. So this next segment is, I want to talk about the Ocean's movie that could have been.
Ooh.
Because maybe this isn't a big surprise, but there were 5 roles in this film that would have, and were going to go to different actors.
Ooh. Tell us more.
So, we're going to start off up at the top with Amal Clooney's husband playing the role of Danny Ocean. Now, who, if not him, do you think could play that role?
Sylvester Stallone.
Okay, we got Sylvester Stallone over here.
I feel like any movie where you hear who would have been the main actor originally, it's always Sylvester Stallone. Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Leanna, what are you thinking?
I'm having trouble coming up with a replacement for Amal Clooney's husband because the first actor I thought of was a better replacement for Brad Pitt.
Okay. Who was it?
I think Ryan Gosling could replace Brad Pitt.
Okay.
And I'm assuming we're only picking men because there were only men in the running.
Was Ryan Gosling big in 2001?
I don't know when The Notebook came out, and that, to me, was his big, big break.
Yeah, but that was when Ryan Gosling was... I think he was kind of more synonymous with...
2004.
Romantic films?
Yeah,
and not
okay.
so much with his, like...
And I also think A-list here.
Ryan Gosling today could be a replacement. That's who I'm picturing. Like, the Ryan Gosling that was in The Big Short, or Drive, or... He could be in...
Ooh, Christian Bale.
Christian Bale, ooh, that's a good one.
I could see that.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. As a replacement for Amal Clooney's husband.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, well, I like that.
It was actually Bruce Willis who was slated for the role of Danny Ocean.
I could see that, too.
I don't like it as much.
I don't like it as much either.
But
it doesn't sound good.
But you guys, think of how similar it is to Die Hard. There's an elevator scene.
A little bit of humor in there. Yeah, I could see that.
He would be playing, it'd be a John McClane film.
It's just a much, he's a much not gruffer. A suave. Yes, not suave, much gruffer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely a gruffer role.
Yeah.
All right, up next, in the roles of Virgil and Turk, the brothers out of Utah.
Okay, Bradley Cooper is one of them.
In 2000? Okay.
You're thinking he's replacing...
Okay, Bradley that Cooper today. Guy. I'm having a really hard time remembering what actors were like when I was 11 years old.
Yeah,
okay.
That's fair.
I'm thinking Edward Norton.
Think better on this one. Think better on this one. Think like actual brothers.
Owen Wilson and Luke Wilson.
Yes.
Oh, that would have been so good!
How good would that have been? Like, actual brothers, like... I feel like that's just a moment in cinema that is fun. Where
have they
actually...
ever been in a movie together?
Yeah, they were in the Darjeeling Limited.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I saw like half of that a long time ago. Yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah, but can you imagine those brothers with Bruce Willis? That is a weird combination.
That's
to
a
me.
Weird combination.
I'm having a hard time imagining them with this cast.
I would have preferred them over.
Casey Affleck
and
the other guy.
Oh, I'm sorry, that other guy.
Yeah.
I think it would have been a really interesting, a lot of fun. Then we have Mark Wahlberg as Linus taking over Matt Damon's role.
I could see
obviously.
It.
Don't love it. Again, not my favorite.
He's more of a klutz than a dweeb, and I liked Matt Damon being a dweeb.
I also just don't really like Mark Wahlberg.
No, no one likes Mark Wahlberg.
I think America likes Mark Wahlberg. It's unfortunate.
Do we?
Yeah.
Is that he was one of like that?
He was like one of the top billed actors in the previous years. The Transformers franchise put him there.
I was just about to ask, what has he even been in?
Pain and Gain.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, and he's also got, he's like been working on cleaning up his image to where it's very family friendly now. And oh, he was in Daddy's Home too. That's right.
Oh. I felt a little part of me die inside mentioning that.
I can't.
That's the only time it's ever
going to
be
mentioned
Wahlberg on
this.
No, I'm not.
So are we coming out with a hot munch take? We're not a big fan of Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah.
I'm going to put it on hiatus, or I'm going to put it in like the warning area until I see Boogie Nights. And then I'll kind of come down with a verdict. How's that sound?
Okay, that sounds good.
And finally... replacing our lovable man Don Cheadle.
Ooh.
Ewan McGregor.
Oh.
I could see it.
An actual British man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone who could actually do that.
They were like, no, maybe British. No, let's make this role American.
He would have had a southern accent.
Yeah.
That would have been hilarious.
My God, that would have been great.
Well, that kind of debunks my whole theory about Don Cheadle just walking on set, though.
I didn't want to say anything, but...
It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see him being good in that role. It would also mean that, like, then a large portion of the cast is white.
I was thinking that, too.
Just Bernie Mac and, what's his name?
The flexible guy.
Oh, The Amazing Yen?
Something like that? The Amazing Something.
Yeah, he's The Amazing
The Incredible Something.
Yeah. Or maybe it's The Incredible. Yen? Okay.
That would be such a different...
It would. I think it would be as good.
No, I like this idea of this alternate universe where all those people were cast instead of what we ended up with. And just how different... Like, one, would the film have been as good as it was?
No. It wouldn't have.
As well as it has. Like, would we have gotten sequels to that film?
I like to imagine that Amal Clooney's husband and Brad Pitt are really good friends in real life, too, because of the good connection, such a good connection they have in the film itself. Like, it feels so authentic that they must be friends in real life.
See,
I would love to find out that they secretly loathe each other. And they're actually just very good actors.
I don't want that. What I'm picturing now is that they actually did the casting. Just the two of them, like, sitting at a table.
Like every high school movie's cheer tryout scene.
Yeah. But also they're, like, recruiting the gang scenes in this one.
It's kind of like that X-Force scene in Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
where they sign everyone
exactly.
up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So that would be a very different Ocean's 11. Who knows if Amal Clooney would have met Amal Clooney's husband. Maybe it wouldn't have worked out that way. I don't know when they met, so.
I don't either.
Oh, well. And so with that, we're going to start wrapping up by going into our final sequence. And normally we either give a suggestion or like a stay away from for recent movies we've watched. But I think this time around, because we have all seen both Deadpool 2, you've seen Deadpool 2, correct? And Solo.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to do a quick roundtable about our thoughts on both of those films and then wrap it up. How's that sound? Those seem topical.
Sure.
We aren't planning on doing any meals for both those films, so I'd love to get like everyone's take and
rapid fire
and see
and
where
spoilers
we're
abound potentially.
Yeah, let's throw it out. We will definitely put a spoiler tag ahead of this. We are going to talk about probably the ending of both these films, maybe.
Yeah, we should really talk about the one in Deadpool and Solo. We should talk about both.
Yeah, there's things to talk about in both.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Let's start off with Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
How does that sound?
That sounds good.
Sure. I saw that one more recently.
Oh, you saw that one. I think I saw Deadpool 2 before I saw Solo. So Deadpool 2. Thoughts, and then move on to questions or where you're...
Well, I could have gone without the first 15 minutes of the film.
What specifically in which Vanessa dies?
Vanessa dying.
Yeah.
It was just, Andre and I had a discussion afterwards where I was complaining that I felt like it was just completely unnecessary. They didn't need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And Andre asked, well, if that didn't happen, what would motivate Deadpool to go join to care about kids and to go join the, X-Men except not and create mm-hmm. X-Force. And, we decided there are a couple options actually, if you just spend like 5 minutes thinking about it. She could like get pregnant and just be pregnant and he could be struggling with what it's going to be like to be dad.
Right.
Cause dad's a big role and that could drive him to see what he'd be like as a father and to care about kids and to find responsibility and commitment. And
he can have the whole arc of like, this kid's the worst. I don't want to have kids. This is, and then fall in love with the kid and then be like, oh my God, I need to take care of this kid. Yeah.
Or instead of being mm-hmm. excited about having kids from the beginning, Vanessa could really want to have kids and he could be uncertain about his role as a father and kind of go down that similar path. Mm-hmm. All possible without her dying.
Yeah.
Like,
and specifically falling into kind of the fridging yep. cliche, which is like specifically when a woman dies and that motivates the male hero to move forward, which is also what happens with Cable. And it seems like a weird and surprising cliche for this film of all films to fall into when it's supposed to be so aware of the cliches within the genre itself.
It spends 90% of the film with Deadpool making very self-aware comments, and yet it falls back onto this very predictable and disappointing trope. And I expected more from Deadpool.
And it starts
I was really excited about this film. I went into this with high expectations because the last one did such a good job of turning your expectations around
mm-hmm.
that when they resorted to this, I was like, really?
I don't think Deadpool spent 90% of his time being very self-aware, though. I thought in the first third of the movie, there were a bunch of self-aware and fourth wall breaking jokes. But after that, it felt more like a normal superhero movie.
Well, I felt like they consistently at least had something to reference it, whether it was in passing or it was a quick look at the camera, because you had the jokes about kind of phrasing of words kind of throughout the film. And there would be a very subtle, like, look at the camera in those moments. So I think it, and also Deadpool's character is definitely a character that is, excels and is unique when it references itself and references the production company behind it and references the cliches within in the genre itself.
Also, I don't think it is a coincidence that most of the film takes place without you actually seeing Ryan Reynolds' face, because the dialogue was so quick and so nonstop that I'm sure a lot of the references that they added in were added in post.
80 yard in.
80 yard
in. Yeah, I could totally see that.
Yeah. There was one scene, pretty much whenever, I assume whenever they shoot someone talking from behind their head,
it's ADR.
It's ADR.
Yeah.
And there was, I can't remember when it happened, but there was one scene, it might have been Vanessa, where it just felt like it really stood out.
Oh, interesting. I mean, that's probably a great, like...
Or Domino in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Domino is great.
Well, okay. I had an issue with Domino as well.
Let's hear
because
it.
I really, really wanted to like Domino. And originally walking out of the movie, I was thinking to myself, she was the best part of this film. Really enjoy that actress. She's awesome. Enjoyed every scene she was in. Yeah. And then I had this realization that she's really the only... a female superhero that they use in the film because the, what's her name? Negasonic Teenage Warhead?
Yes.
Is that right? Did I get that right?
That is correct.
She's barely in it, despite the fact that she's awesome. She's barely in it.
And her girlfriend. Yeah.
And her girlfriend. Barely in it. Her girlfriend has, like, one action sequence in the film. But Domino, they gave her the only power that takes away all of her, like, skill. Everything happens to her because of luck. Mm-hmm. And so it makes you realize that every badass moment she had can just be explained away with luck, which kind of makes her a little less badass in a way.
Yeah.
I think she still works it really well. Like, she, like, it's one thing to just be interacting and have luck happen around you, but she understands that luck is her power,
mm-hmm.
and she embraces it, and it's a moment where, like, she knows she's lucky. She's still talented, because you see when she's driving the truck and she fires off some shots and actually fights with Cable in those moments. Like, she is still a very powerful hero, but she embraces that aspect of luck, and...
Like, she's so confident about it, too.
It's not, like, a pure skill, necessarily. Mm-hmm. Like, it's definitely, like, an aura around her. But I think she's a very confident character and confident in her luck. And it's like...
Okay.
When they're saying, like, luck's not a skill, luck's not power. And she's like, nope, pretty sure it is. And then she goes on to show them and has probably some of the coolest action sequences in the entire film.
She does, yeah.
Yeah.
There's not enough of them. That's for sure.
Yeah, she comes in a little late.
Yeah.
I think it was just also that, again, she's the only female superhero that they really use. And so it was disappointing that the one they focused on so much, luck was her super... Like, it just would have been nice to also show some... I mean, I also started thinking after that, I was like, well, what are superpowers besides luck?
Yeah.
And then I got in this whole, like, existential argument in my head, but...
But yeah, I think that experience of enjoying it in the moment, and then the moment you leave the theater, specifically with Deadpool 2, the moment you leave the theater, the enjoyment you had while watching it very quickly begins to fall away.
Yeah, and I didn't have as many like outbursts of laughter as I did during the first movie.
Okay. Yeah. I think I enjoyed Deadpool 2 more than I did Deadpool 1.
Oh, really?
I remember enjoying Deadpool 1 a lot more.
Yeah, I do too. It kind of made me want to go back and watch it and see if that still holds true.
Yeah.
But
I bet
there are so many movies to watch in so little time.
I know.
I'm getting my MBA, so.
Yeah.
And I bet these films specifically are, like, good on the first time, then when you know the jokes, they don't hit the same.
Yeah.
Might as well. All right.
Solo.
But one thing I do want to mention about the fridging specifically, Gail Simone, who is the... she has done a lot of writing, comic book writing, and is the origin of the term fridging, and that she came up with it, says this isn't necessarily technically fridging. I think that's up for debate, but because they essentially do rewind and save Vanessa.
Yeah, do you think that was real?
Yeah, I'm assuming all that is happening.
Okay, because Andre and I were debating about that too. I wasn't sure if I should take it as real, because they mix it in with a bunch of other stuff that's obviously not real.
I would assume all that's real within that Deadpool universe.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm assuming Vanessa will be alive in Deadpool 3.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing that kind of only Deadpool can do, but...
See, when she died, I thought, well, they must not have renewed her contract for the third season or something.
Third movie. Third movie. I could not watch a season of Deadpool.
We should talk about Solo. We've talked about this for a long time.
I think we had thoughts. All right. Yeah. Solo. Oh, boy. Solo.
I enjoyed Solo.
I don't think I enjoyed it as much as you
did. I liked Solo more than Deadpool.
Same.
Yeah.
I think I liked, in the moment, I liked Deadpool 2 more than I liked Solo.
I think leaving the theater,
extremely mediocre films, I think.
Leaving the theater, I also felt better about Solo. I don't know, like, it hasn't soured on me too much. Like, I recognize there's a lot of fan service going on. And for some reason it didn't, like, sit as well with me as the fan service in Rogue One did. But I still enjoyed watching it. I like the character of Han Solo. I was surprised. What's the actor's name?
Alden Ehrenreich.
Yeah, I didn't have super high expectations, and he had a really hard job in that Harrison Ford did that role perfectly. Like, you can't expect someone else to do it better. And he actually, like, did a pretty good job of embodying the character, I thought. One thing Ben and I talked about was that it was just so convenient how they squeezed everything in Han Solo's backstory that, like, comes up in the entire Star Wars series in, like, this 1 month time period.
Like, it makes Han Solo sound like a very shallow character. Yeah. And someone with not a lot of depth. And it makes me hate the character of Han Solo more because of that. Like, I do not care for Han Solo. He does not seem to have, like, quite, like, he is basically just picking up things that were thrown at him over a 3 month period of time, and he has defined his entire character off those 3 months and hasn't particularly grown a lot until you have those moments where he is, I mean,
I thought it took place over like 2 years.
Well, we talked about that. Ben and I were talking before you showed up.
Well, that's rude.
He has those.
Sorry, we should have just sat at the table silently for 20 minutes while we waited for you.
He has those 3 years that he's with the Empire. And then, like, basically everything else kind of happens after that. You don't necessarily have a sense of the time, but you imagine it happens pretty quickly.
Okay.
Because Enfys Jest is on Woody Harrelson's tail, and so all that stuff kind of happens pretty quickly. And so ultimately, like, he's building his entire character on these 3 months, and it feels, I don't know, it just feels really weird and really shallow in a way that hasn't quite sat with me in a way that I wanted to, or I wanted to enjoy. And then as for the film itself, I feel like the film just robs itself of all these powerful emotional moments that the film could have had, but all fall very flat. Like, the moment where Lando goes to save L3 is a moment that should be somewhat powerful, and then you just come away feeling, or at least personally, I never felt a lot in that moment. Like, it should be this powerful moment where the connection between L3 and Lando is torn away from him, and then you should ultimately have this great, like, almost empowerment moment when they hook L3's navigational computer up into the Millennium Falcon itself, and she kind of fuses her consciousness with the ship that is going to save them ultimately, and it's ultimately what explains its maybe temperamental nature in the later films, and, like, kind of creates this really interesting dynamic about the Millennium Falcon itself as this being beyond more than just ship metal.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it more interesting, but those scenes and those moments are robbed of kind of basically all emotion, and they just fall very flat. A similar moment happens towards the end of the film when Han Solo realizes that Kira's just going to fly away. Like, this should be this powerful moment where, like, now she is deciding on her own to leave him. And you should have a nice parallel from the moment earlier in the film where she is where she's pulled away from him. And yet, like, it just falls completely flat and lacks the, like, the emotional moment that should happen there.
For me, that was just another moment where it's like, okay, so this is explaining why he's, like, emotionally distant with women. it just felt like another like checkmark of things we know about Han Solo. Let's explain how it came to be that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I see what Ben's saying, though. I guess the from the perspective of watching Kira make the decision, I felt the weight more from her perspective than from Solo's. If I'm remembering it correctly, because it was like a week ago that I saw it, he just kind of stares and watches it go away. Like, there's not a whole lot of...
And you don't quite see her reaction in that moment. Like,
well, like, I almost feel like you can see her, like, tighten her jaw and...
Yeah, when she's looking out the window.
Yeah, she looks very stoic. That felt intentional. That felt like she... You could kind of sense... Because she's making a hard choice to disappoint someone.
Right.
Yeah, I just don't think it was given, like, its emotional moment that it deserved. Because that is a strong moment. That is a moment where, like, they have this moment of reconciliation. And there's always that going to be that tension because you, as the audience, know that there's something. Like, she is bound to Red Dawn itself, or Dryden Vos specifically. So you imagine there's going to be this moment where, like, push comes to shove and they're not actually going to end up together. And you're expecting it to build to this interesting moment, and then the moment happens and you're past it and doesn't have the payoff that what they've set up earlier in the film, it feels like.
I like the train heist, though. I thought that was really cool. I thought
the train heist was really fun. Yeah.
I mean...
Visually interesting, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, a really interesting train. Really interesting take on a train.
Yeah, because it was, like, moving sideways. And...
Yeah, I just... I loved... Visually, that was super cool. That was a lot of fun to watch.
And then, like, the two different sides trying to... Leanna and I were talking about how much it was like the first Fast and Furious movie.
Bring it back to Fast and Furious.
Yeah. Where you have two different sides... competing for this one.
It's not the first heist. Fast and Furious movie.
No, is it the fourth?
It's the fourth one.
The fourth one. Yeah. You kind of have the good guys and the bad guys both trying to steal from each other and from the train and getting in each other's way. And this is all happening at very high speeds.
Wait, Fast Five?
It's...
Does it happen on a train?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Fast Five.
Is that Five?
Is that Five? Okay.
Yeah, everything good happens in Five.
Apparently.
Oh, Five is such a good movie.
Yeah.
So Darth Maul...
guess he survived.
What a weird... Like, I'm assuming that sets up for a sequel to this film.
I guess, yeah, the last 5 minutes...
It feels like they're setting up for another film.
The last 5 minutes felt very, like, setup-y. Well, introducing Darth Maul and...
Even Kira just flying off, to me, felt like enough of a sequel. I was like, I want to know what she goes and does. I want to know what's next.
Right.
Especially because if they do make a sequel... What else can they cover in Solo's past? We know how he got his name. We know how he met Chewie. We know how he gets the ship. Right. We know how he meets Lando. Like, we know all of it. He doesn't have the ship
yet because Lando ran off with it.
Lando ran off with it?
Yeah.
No, he got it back.
He got it back.
Did you watch the after credits? Wait, was it after credits? No, it was just the end.
There's never after credits. Yeah.
Yeah, he wins it back.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that one.
He does.
Yeah.
Which is also referenced in the other films that he won it in a card game.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
Check.
Yeah.
What a boring card game.
Yeah, because you kind of know how it's going to go.
And for the reveal to be just that he has a card, like...
I really like Donald Glover in this.
I thought he was just okay.
I like the style. I like the costumes they gave him.
Yeah, he captured Lando's personality very well.
He was not in it enough.
Yeah, I could go with more Lando.
And what he did have, I felt like... He was holding back a little bit.
Also, I would watch a Lando film.
I would watch a Lando film.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that'll be the sequel.
Get at us, Hollywood.
I've been reading up a lot about, like, because there was a book that came out that's basically The Art of Solo, and it starts to dive into kind of what some of the characters were earlier on and how, like, Dryden Vos was a different character. A more alien character, and he was originally played by Michael K. Williams, but couldn't reprise that role when they needed to do reshoots. But also Kira was going to be like a humanoid alien. And there's just a lot of like thematic things that they were setting up to be this like kind of interesting Western that I would have loved to see how that film would have been interesting, even if it wasn't good. I think it would have been interesting where Solo was ultimately a known quantity.
Well, Ben, I'll tell you what, if you're interested in Westerns and aliens...
It would happen to be aliens
versus cowboys.
Cowboys versus aliens.
Cowboys versus aliens.
Really,
yeah.
A versus? Jesus.
Yeah, it's a versus with none other than Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig, that's right.
Yeah.
He's got I thought, was it Woody Harrelson? That would be funny, but no.
It's
it
not funny. It's not. It's serious.
There's someone, like, it's Daniel Craig, and then there's one other person, like, one other well known actor, right?
It's just Daniel Craig.
Really? It's him in CGI,
yeah,
mostly.
It's pretty much him in CGI. It's just him on a soundstage.
Oh, it's Cowboys and Aliens.
It
also,
is?
Also, Harrison Ford is in that film.
I thought it was Cowboys versus Aliens.
Wow. It's definitely Cowboys and Aliens.
Well, versus would have been better. I mean, that's what the film is.
Yeah.
It's a more accurate title. Unbelievable.
Please.
Jeez, these people. And that is another episode of the Munch Podcast. You can find our posts at getmunchedup.com. We would also love to answer any questions. If you're looking for advice, we'd love to answer all of that. You can email us up at getmunchedup@gmail.com. You can find our posts and photos at getmunchedup on Instagram. We are also on Twitter, getmunchedup. We have a Letterboxd account as well that we update with new posts every so often as we review films more in a more formal manner. And so follow us there as well. And with that was a good conversation. Good day.